You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In an interview with the Paris Review in 1981, Gabriel Garcia Marquez said, in praising his translator Gregory Rabassa, quote, "Translating is a very difficult job, not at all rewarding and very badly paid." Despite the fact that translators are responsible for bringing the world's best literature to the English-speaking world, the literary quality of their work is often overlooked. But in Idra Novi's debut novel, Ways to Disappear, an American translator steps into the spotlight when she travels to Brazil to search for Beatriz Yagoda, the author who she had been translating for years. Beatriz had abruptly disappeared. Her novel is published by Little Brown, and I'm very pleased that it brings Idra Novi back to our show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, let's get back to that Garcia Marquez interview in the Paris Review. He goes on to say, "That's why I have such admiration for translators. They are intuitive rather than intellectual. Not only is what publishers pay them completely miserable, but they don't see their work as literary creation." Do you agree? And also, do you agree that they're not intellectual?
Well, one of the reasons I wrote this book is that I couldn't find any novels that conveyed the translators that I've come to know, who are incredibly adventurous, incredibly intellectual and passionate, generous, worldly people. And so I wrote the book I couldn't find.
Translators, in the end, are giving us a book of their own. We're only reading the translator's version, and that's why we read sometimes more than one translation of the same work.
Yes, and I think that as opposed to seeing as a remove, that you can see it as a recreation in another language. I think of it as a recreation as opposed to version.
In Ways to Disappear, Emma, your protagonist, has only paid $500 for every book of Beatriz Yagoda's that she translates. People get paid that poorly?
I wish that weren't true.
Oh, gee. She hides that amount from a loan shark that she meets when she arrives in Brazil.
Well, this novel started out as a love letter to translation and to translators, who I wanted to show as the adventurous, worldly people who we don't often see them portrayed as being. But as the book evolved and draft by draft, it became much more than that. And it became more about definitions in general and how other people define us and how we define and redefine ourselves. Because I think definitions play a role, especially now in the era of social media, of how we're aware of how other people define us.
And the book has a noirish feel to it. Was that something that was there from the start?
I had this notion of a writer who had a secret life, and it was something happening online that nobody knew about. And I've just been fascinated. I've been reading articles about that, about how many times you can have some life online that no one knows about for a long time. And I wondered how that might play out for a writer who has that life. And then she has her life as a writer, and then she has her life as a mother and as a friend, and how we all have partial views of each other, and that the way you know somebody as a mother, as a friend, may be completely different than who she is online.
Well, online, in her case, involves her playing poker, and that's why she is in trouble with loan sharks.
Absolutely. A lot of poker.
So did she disappear because of the gambling debts?
I think I see her disappearing for all of the ways that she's been confined by her identities as a mother, as a writer, as a poker star, you know, all of these things, and kind of compounded each other.
You've written elsewhere in Electric Literature, quote, "In Brazilian Portuguese, there is a handy phrase for taking off this way without explanation. It's called going embora." People just take off and disappear?
Yes, in fact, there's a famous song by Marisa Monchi that's called "Vou Embora," which basically means "I'm leaving and I won't tell you when I'll be back or where I'm going." And I think we don't have a phrase like that in English where you could just say "going out," but more likely someone
I'm going out for a paper and then you just don't come back.
Yeah, but you wouldn't even have to say "for a paper." You could just say "bye bye" and leave. You know, and I think that's the kind of fascinating thing that happens as a translator, is that you think about these expectations that happen when we speak to each other.
But also, translators become invisible, and you're talking about invisibility here. You write that when a woman's life seems invisible to the people sitting right next to her, that vanishing is often the only way she becomes visible.
Yes. As I was working on this book, I started looking at a lot of other books about disappearances, and I realized how many times it was used to comment on women's invisibility in general and how they aren't seen until they become an absence.
Do you think that if Emma were a man, her partner might have reacted differently to her taking off suddenly to go to Brazil?
Absolutely. I think so. I think a lot of things that have happened to me, I wonder how they would have been seen if, you know, being seen as female and also younger, I think also.
Well, her boyfriend, Miles, becomes very concerned for her safety and doesn't want her to go. Did you ever encounter similar resistance from friends or family? In your case, you moved to Chile and to Brazil.
Yeah, I think... And then New York. I grew up in Appalachia, about 2 hours outside of Pittsburgh.
Well, people understand why you might want to leave there.
Most writers do. James Wright, you know, it's a place that you that sort of gives you the impetus to seek out other places. And in that way, I'm grateful to Appalachia for ending up being a trilingual person.
So. But did it give you a rich culture in its own right, although one that you might not have wanted to stay with?
I think because there were things about Appalachian culture that didn't sit well with me, and it's seen as sort of this marginal part of the United States, that I was always curious about other cultures and other perspectives. And so I think that maybe that wouldn't have happened if I had grown up in a more diverse place than Appalachia. But I was hungry to know about other ways of being in the world and other languages. I was hungry from it from a young age.
So you went to Chile and Brazil, and as a result, you have translated from Portuguese and Spanish. Yeah. But getting back to this whole business about being invisible, the translator thinks that she knows a lot about the person she's translating. And then when Emma arrives in Brazil, she's thought of herself as being very close to Beatriz. Beatriz's family doesn't see it. Her daughter especially doesn't see it that way.
Well, I think that they each know a different version of Beatriz. And what happens is that then they come into conflict because their versions don't match up, which I think happens in any human relationship. So I think Emma does have a profound knowledge of Beatriz as a writer, but not as a mother. And I think Beatriz's children know her as a mother, but haven't really invested in getting to know her as a writer. And so there they are with these conflicting versions, and they're both looking for the same person with a different narrative.
How much do we know of a writer from reading her work?
I would think that it's a version of somebody's sensibility, and somebody who knows you're writing and you as a person would know you in both of those ways. But when you only know one and not the other, it's only a sliver of a person.
Well, it's different if you're writing fiction or if you're writing poetry. You've written poetry.
Yeah.
So I suspect that people reading those poems would have some kind of sense of how you see the world personally, as opposed to through characters who you've invented.
Yes, I think that when you read a poem or a novel or even, you know, nonfiction, that you do come to get to know somebody's values, their convictions, their perception of the world, but you might not know what they eat for breakfast or what kind of a mood they are in, you know, by 10 p.m. It's just a different version. You don't know somebody's vulnerabilities the way you do when you live with them.
Another character that Emma meets is one of Beatriz's publishers, Rocha. Why is he interested in tracking her down? I guess because he's her publisher, but are there other reasons?
Well, I think I wanted in the book to look at the relationship between a translator and a writer and an editor and a writer and the ways that they're both different and the same, because I think as a translator, your identity is wrapped up with the writers you've translated and you're defined by their work. And an editor is as well. An editor is defined by the writers that they've edited and published. So in that way, there's some common ground between them, that their own identity is at stake in Beatriz's identity.
I'm speaking with Idra Novi, whose novel Ways to Disappear is published by Little Brown. Well, Emma says that she would like to find Beatriz and bring her back to the United States for her safety. And Rocha, the publisher, is insulted.
As he should be.
Do they resent the way Americans see the Latin American world?
I think that there's the thought that the line that Hoxha says, he says, you think that, you know, that going to an American university is the pot of gold at the end of every rainbow, when that may not necessarily be the case, that you have living in your own country and in your own language and with people who can read you, who understand where you're writing from, can be an incredibly meaningful and of paramount importance to a writer. I know with Clarice Lispector, who I translated, she wanted to move back to Brazil. She lived abroad. She lived in Washington. She lived in Europe. And she said, I want to live in my native language. And the only place she wanted to live was Brazil. And when she moved back, she never left again.
There are others, when people had to leave Chile, they went to Spain. Yeah. But they talked about how, I remember speaking to Jose Donoso, about how he remembered Chile as this kind of Garden of Eden. And then after he was allowed to return, after the fall of Pinochet, he discovered that it didn't really live up to his fantasies.
Well, but the people who returned to Chile from exile are called retornados, who returned to Chile. And I think there is a lot of fantasies that happen when you're abroad that don't match up when you come back. And I'm married into a Chilean family and have a number of relatives who are retornados. And I think that lapse of expectation and reality is really hard, because they left one country and they came back to another.
In writing this, you also invented stories that Beatrice wrote. That must have been fun, getting into magic realism.
It was so fun. I found it easier to take risks in those stories because I didn't have to write the whole way. So I could kind of come up with these great details and just enjoy writing them, and I didn't have to worry about delivering on the whole story. And so it just became this place I really look forward to writing those sections, because I just threw in all these ideas and didn't have to write the whole book.
Now, in translating, did you fantasize often that you would write your own book sometime?
I've written fiction on and off here and there over the years.
But mostly poetry.
Mostly poetry. And I had translated fiction. And in a way, I think that translating fiction is a great apprenticeship, because I only translated writers I admired and I learned from them. And I think that translating Clarice Lispector, I think translating Lascano Viscontegui, a book called On Elegance While Sleeping, I translated a few years ago, were my teach. They became my teachers, and they taught me how to write fiction, because it's the deepest kind of reading for me is translation, and reading their work fed my own.
You said in an interview in Electric Literature that you wanted each section of this book to function almost like a prose poem. Isn't that a danger for a poet?
I tried to take as many dangers as I could in this book. If I wasn't taking a danger, I deleted it and started again.
So you also included several poems. Are they your poems or are they somebody else's poems?
Oh, they're all mine. You know, in various guises. But yeah, I with this book, I really wanted to push the genre of fiction forward in my own way, bring it to my knowledge as a poet, my knowledge as a translator, my knowledge of world literature, of things that I wanted to bring to writing in English that maybe wasn't happening in ways that it was happening in other languages. Like, I threw it all in.
Do you have any idea of why so many poets have become translators? Is it because they can't make livings as poets?
I think it's because they love language. I think they love hearing the sound of a word in their mouth and seeing how its meaning is affected by its music. And I think if you're a lover of language, translation is an art of language.
Oh, this book can't escape the violence of the kidnapping industry in Brazil, something that's far more common in Brazil than in the United States.
Yes.
And when Americans think about going abroad, I've been to Mexico many times, and every time I go, people will say to me, but it's so dangerous. And it's not dangerous, at least in my experience, but I understand what they're talking about. And the same thing would apply to a country like Brazil.
Yeah, I think it's just a question of perspective. If you want to focus on the most scandalous, upsetting news that is on the TV, or you want to focus on something else, because there's risks in every country, you know?
Well, we had it just now. We had this gunman who killed 8 people in Kalamazoo this weekend, people who just walking down the street.
Going to American movie theater. And I think that violence is cultural, and the way we respond to violence is also cultural. So that was something I wanted to write about in this book, because I think in Appalachia, you know, every friend I went to, they would have a hutch full of guns in their basement. And so it wasn't that I didn't grow up around guns or, you know, hunting accidents. It just was a very different kind of proximity to violence. And so I was aware, living in Chile and then in Brazil, that my experience of violence was not really relevant relevant, but there, it was just a different cultural relationship to violence, which I wanted to explore between Emmanuel and Haquel and the whole danger that they were in.
And just a couple of years ago, in 2013, you wrote for Poetry Foundation magazine, "I wonder what the increasing frequency of major acts of random violence in America will mean for American poetry. Why would that have an impact on poetry?"
Oh, I'm so glad you found that quote. I forgot I said that. But I think because I'm often reading in other languages and reading writers from elsewhere, I think that when you live and with proximity to violence and uncertainty, that uncertainty manifests itself in your writing. And when you're aware of the uncertainty that you're in, I think that that kind of uncertainty then plays into what you write. And I think that in America, we have a huge ongoing growing problem with gun violence. And I think it plays into the art we make.
Idra Novi's latest book is a novel. She has translated Clarice Lispector and others, published 4 volumes of poetry. Now this novel called Ways to Disappear, which is published by Little Brown. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Honored to be here. Thank you.